As a CEO or entrepreneurial leader, you want to focus on overall vision, alignment, and running a great business. You want your business to run efficiently, with less effort and little pain. Welcome to Operationally Speaking with Sergio Samel. Sergio and his very special guests will give you the tools to run your business well and gain the momentum to break through to the next level. Now, here is your host, Sergio Samel.
Welcome, 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 welcome to episode number 15 of Operationally Speaking, a show exclusively dedicated to the art and science of operating entrepreneurial businesses. I'm Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm the principal EOS implementer at Get Business Momentum, where we help owners and CEOs of small to mid-sized entrepreneurial companies like yours get what you want out of your business by implementing a well-proven, complete system for operating your company. Last week, I spent this time with Dave Fuller, author of Profit Yourself Healthy. Dave and I spoke about the sources of stress in business, not only to the business owner, but to the entire organization. We also spoke about the sources of lack of profit and how stress or lack of health, both at an individual and organizational levels, and profit interact with each other. If you missed that episode, you can listen to it on demand here on the Voice America Business Channel. When you do, make sure you click on the banners to get your free consultation on how to turn your business vision into reality right now. You can also listen to the episode wherever you listen to podcasts, such as on iTunes or Stitcher. And now, let me introduce my great guest today, Sean Campbell. Sean, since 2006, you have been the CEO of Cascade Insights. Previously, you successfully grew and sold your first company, 3Leaf Solutions. You enjoy sharing best practices and tips with business professionals on topics such as professional services, firm leadership, marketing tactics and strategies, market research, and competitive intelligence as a discipline. To date, you've had the opportunity to speak at over 250 industry events and have published 3 books, 2 for Microsoft and 1 for Intel, 1 ebook, Going Beyond Google, alongside with a plethora of articles and blog posts, and in addition to being the host of the B2B Revealed podcast. So I'm so pleased and honored, really, to have you on the Operational Speaking Show. So just to set a little bit of a context, Sean, how did you and I connect in the first place?
Well, I think we ended up connecting just via email. I'd have to go back and look to see exactly how it came across. But, you know, I think it was there's this newsletter that goes out for folks that own podcasts. And you can put your name out there and say, like, hey, I'd like to be interviewed. And you can even see other podcasts that are looking for interviewees. And I think that's how we originally got connected.
I think you're right. So, you know, I like to start things on a slightly lighter note. You know, business is so serious. And in fact, you know, related to what I just said earlier, it's actually quite stressful to many. So do you have like a favorite business anecdote or joke you can share?
Yeah, I mean, probably anybody who's been in business has a ton of them. I mean, one that just comes to mind was when I came out here to the Northwest. I originally grew up in Chicago, and I joke I can fake native in either part of the country now. I've been out here for 25 years plus. But when I moved to Portland, you know, needless to say, Chicago's business attire is, you know, a little more conservative than you'll find in the Northwest. And so I was been here about a year, and I was used to wearing suits in Chicago, and, you know, that seemed very normal, worked downtown in the Loop. And I went to go give a presentation at Microsoft. And, you know, I thought I'm going to the big Microsoft. I mean, this is when Microsoft was cool. This was 1999. They're kind of half cool again, but they had a very dark period there for a while with things like Microsoft Vista and whatever. But anyway, so I was up there, and I went in a suit. And if anybody knows anything about the tech sector and anything knows about a company that's growing like that, it's the equivalent of going to Google today in a suit, right? And exactly. So I went there and wore a suit and gave this presentation. Presentation went really well. It was this geeky thing I had to go deliver about SQL Server clustering back then. And anyway, at the bottom of an eval, somebody gave me really good marks, but in about 92-point font, they wrote suit, question mark, question mark, exclamation, exclamation. So at that moment, I ditched every suit that I've owned. I don't think I've even gone to a wedding here in a suit ever since then. And so, you know, it's just something to say that in business, especially if you have a business that's virtual and you deal with accounts across the country or around the world, you do have to really kind of put yourself in the mindset of that region you're talking to, even if you're not going to physically go there. And especially if you are, you know, dressing for Silicon Valley is way different than dressing for Seattle. And it's especially way different than dressing for a business meeting in New York. And I'm not a fashion consultant by any stretch, but just ask my wife. But, you know, but the reality is there's something to be said about understanding the culture, even the microculture you're either selling or interacting with. And that was an interesting lesson for me.
Absolutely. And so this is how Microsoft single-handedly destroyed the suit industry in the Northwest, right?
Right. Yeah, I had meetings after meetings there years after that where, you know, we would close 100K POs or whatever, and I would be sitting in a T-shirt and shorts that I probably didn't even press. And that was because the guy across from me was the same, right?
Exactly.
And so it was just, it's just the way it's done. And they've obviously matured some now. If you go have a meeting there now, I wouldn't recommend going in a crumpled T-shirt. But there was a period of time that was considered formal attire up there.
That's right. So one other thing that I'm always interested in when I talk to new people, and I actually ask this question of everybody who comes on this show, is how did they come to be who they are? So Sean, is there an event or a force or maybe a person in the early stages of your life that has had the strongest influence on you becoming who you are today?
Yeah, it's a force slash person, and then obviously somebody that I talk to every day as well. I mean, for me, my faith's the strongest influence on my life. It puts everything in perspective: job success or failure, the relationships I have with work colleagues, friends, and family. You know, in essence, everything. Outside of my faith, the most important person in my life, as it relates to my business and my personal life, is honestly my wife. She's been involved in both businesses that I've owned. And I've come to rely on her counsel, her way of thinking through problems I've faced as a business owner, and just in general, the fact she's always has been and will be my best friend. So frankly, my faith and my wife are the two biggest influences on me.
This is really very beautiful and actually moving. So tell us just in a minute or so a little bit about Cascade Insights, what its purpose is and what is it best at?
Yeah, we... As my business partner likes to say, we exist to deliver bad news, and that's not entirely true. We deliver lots of good news too, but we get hired either because clients are facing pain or opportunity. They're either facing some competitive threat and they need to research that. You know, they need to understand why that competitor is doing better than them, or they're facing some degree of opportunity. They want to shift to a new market segment. They want to tackle a new buyer persona. They have a new product that they've launched and they want to determine whether it's going to be successful or how to make it so. And so we'll work with sales and marketing and leadership teams to develop research projects that help them be more effective. But truthfully, I'd say, you know, 75% of the time, at least over 50, clients come to us because they're under some kind of pain. Typically, you do research when you don't understand things. And so more often than not, that comes from some feeling of market pressure or market concern. And then you need to do some research to understand why that's happening.
Exactly. So, you know, you've started a couple of businesses and you've been dealing with people who start businesses. Of course, the theme of our conversation today is working on the business. But the truth is that when people actually start businesses, even when they start businesses as a, let's say, a couple of partners and so forth, they don't really start in that mode, right? So what's really the difference between when the stage where you are like one person or maybe two partners, or since you are in the high-tech industry, we used to call this the three guys back in the garage type of setting, and one that has really an organization, let's say, even in the realm of small businesses, let's say a 20 or so person business. So from an owner's perspective, what's the difference?
Well, there's a lot of differences, and I'll just talk at least initially, and then we can dig into wherever you want to go from there, that point you made earlier about people don't start there. They don't start working on versus in. And to be clear, that statement isn't mine. That's Michael Gerber's from The E-Myth Revisited, which was a book that I read really early in my entrepreneurial career. And it really affected me because he said, so many people, when their business grows, they don't work to change their perspective. They don't go from working in the business to on it. But to your point, a lot of people, when they start, they need to stay focused on in the business when they're small. In fact, before we get to the working on the business part, I would say that the biggest failure I see of one-person entrepreneurs, you know, people who are constantly telling you, like, I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to start this business, or I started it and I didn't really fully start it, or it never really came to fruition, or I never left my day job. They're constantly working on it, not in it. So that's the moment in time when you're one, two, three people where really all your motivation should be to work in it. You need to get work, you need to do work, you need to follow through on that work, you need to get more work. And what I find is that when businesses are hyper small, the people who want to lead them tend to kind of talk these big dreams about, you know, working on it and their mission statements and all that other stuff. And the reality is, you know, you got to get work to even get to any place where you can have a mission statement that matters to some degree, right? I mean, you can always have a mission, but when you start to worry about the flowery stuff around a business and whether you can change your website to some magical looking thing, in the beginning, you have to have the fuel of the projects and the clients to even get there. And so a lot of early stage businesses fail because people dream versus work, I guess, is the short analogy. And once you get moving, though, then there is this inflection point somewhere probably between 5 and 10 employees, depending on kind of the structure of the business you have, where you have to start thinking about working on it. You have to start thinking about the processes you're going to have. You need to start hiring maybe different types of people. You need to start figuring out who can actually be a manager type person, who can actually control certain things when you're not around. And sometimes that's a really, really hard transition for small business owners because they spend all this time working in it and they feel personally invested, their pride, their sense of ownership. And in one way, they want to grow. They want to have this great firm that like has even a bigger reputation, and that might lead to financial success or just overall goodwill they're creating in their community. But what they have to realize is the trade-off is they can't be personally responsible for everything then. And it's at that moment that I think you see a lot of businesses kind of stop growing, sometimes even grow inappropriately and then fail. And so that's a really challenging time for a lot of firms at that point.
Right, absolutely. In fact, your distinction and this whole theory of this switch between in to on that happens is actually quite remarkable. And I may actually be stealing that from you as an idea. So we have to take a break in just a few seconds. But when we come back, I'd like to continue this conversation about that that difference between on and in, working on the business or in the business. Not from the owner's perspective, but from the other people's perspective that are involved in the organization, from the employee's perspective. So let's take a break and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
Tune in to the Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel, and simulcast at the same time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Semel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Semel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Sean Campbell, CEO of Cascade Insight. Before the break, Sean, we were talking about this kind of inflection point that happens somewhere in the progression of or the growth progression of a company from, let's say, the initial founder or founders up to about 10 people and so forth on the way to 20 people. Now, let's talk a little bit about, just for a minute or two, about the same story, but actually viewed from the other perspective, which is the perspective of the employees or the people who work inside the organization. How is that different?
Well, one of the biggest things I think is you lose a little bit of direct contact with the owner, you know, one of the or owner team, you know, depending on what, how the company's structured. I know one thing people say when they interview with our firm is, you know, I don't want to be lost in the shuffle of a large company. I don't want to necessarily have my contributions undervalued because I'm working in Intel or some really large company and nobody knows what I'm doing. And that's not to say that the second a small company grows, all those things start to happen. But what is true is that if you walk into a company that's two or three people and you're employee ID number one or number two, you know, there's going to be kind of a honeymoon period where you're going to get a lot of one-on-one time with the ownership team. They're going to be very passionate about what they're doing. And then, you know, frankly, they're going to start hiring people and growing people, and you're going to have to schedule a meeting maybe to talk to the owner, or you're going to have more impromptu quick conversations, but it's not going to feel like this small tribe of two or three people that are really actively kind of trying to solve these problems creatively, just in this really tiny, tiny, tiny group. So there's plenty of collaboration that goes on. There's plenty of conversations, but it does become more structured. And I think sometimes for employee ID number one or two or three, that shift that happens, especially if they're not given an increased level of responsibility, like maybe they're a great employee, but they're not a manager type, that can be a little tough for them to work through. But the other side of the coin is that there's a lot of opportunity that's generated for growth as the company grows. So all of a sudden, instead of just being an assistant to the owner, you're now actually somebody who's running projects. Maybe you're in charge of client relationships. You're responsible for generating revenue. You're able to create marketing ideas and execute on them. So I think in large part, outside of that relationship change that has to happen a little bit, I think, you know, it's all a net positive from the employee perspective, assuming they're willing to grow. Then I think they get a lot of opportunities they wouldn't have otherwise.
So right. So staying with this whole theme of growth between, let's say, maybe one or a couple of people, founders, to the 20, 30 size, smallish company, you know, we sometimes talk about organizations or businesses having three fundamental functions. One is the sales and marketing function. You know, you got to create demand for your products or services and bring customers in so you can actually create revenue. Then there is the operations part, let's call it that way, which is, you know, you got to create your products and services and, of course, deliver them or fulfill them to your customers. And then there is the other third one, which is the, let's call it finance, or more general would be, resource management, where you have to manage your resources, your money primarily, your people, and who knows what other assets you may have. So let's look at a couple of those things as they evolve in this kind of progression from early stage to this kind of mid stage of 20, 30 people. So how do sales and marketing need to evolve as a company grows from the initial starting point to this new stage?
Yeah, there's a lot of changes there. I think on the sales side, it's perhaps bigger in terms of an evolution. On the marketing side, it's more what you have to create net new, and I can explain both of those things. I mean, sure. On the sales side, the biggest challenge is that in the early days, the product, the seller, and the owner are the same person. And I'm not the only person to have commented that way. I mean, that's a well-known thing, right? You know, you're kind of, and that's what makes it great to be like a one or two person firm. You know, I sell the work, I do the work, I get more work, I'm rewarded for all of that. That's great. But as you grow, you need to break kind of your role as the seller down into its constituent parts. And that can be really, really hard because sales is a relationship-driven thing. Even in some transactional oriented at sales environments, there's still a degree of relationship there. There's a degree of intuition that goes into it. A lot of emotion goes into it, even today, you know, and as sales has been kind of, you know, it's more virtual and it's more distant in some ways, and the buyer's journey has changed, and all of those things are true. But selling is still kind of a emotional, intuition-driven game to a large extent, especially for small businesses. And so you need to break that role down. And so you need to have somebody thinking about perhaps lead generation, and somebody thinking about nurturing clients. And maybe you have to train people on how to write proposals as good as you write them. And you have to think about even just maintaining relationships, you know, and some of this varies based on the kind of business you are, right? I mean, we sell to mid-market and enterprise companies exclusively in the tech sector and only worry about the B2B sides of their business because we only focus on B2B market research. You know, if you were a different type of small business that had maybe more of a transactional type of relationship, maybe you don't worry so much about proposal development, but you worry more about lead generation, right?
Exactly.
But you've got to break this down. And a lot of times, owners are good sellers because they're the owner, not because they're good sellers. So what happens then is, they're trying to break down a process they don't really fully understand, nor are they actually innately good at, in essence. And so then it's doubly hard, right? If you're not an Olympic pole vaulter, and now you have to teach people how to become one and how to set up pole vaulting equipment, well, that can be really hard, right? And so that's one part that's definitely challenging. On the marketing side, one big thing is just the changes that have happened in general, right? I mean, just the way people find services firms is very, very different than, you know, 15 years ago, of course. And we could talk about that later. But, you know, so you're going to have more marketing as you start a firm now than you would have had 15 years ago. But even so, the level of the marketing you do starts to ramp up pretty quickly. If you're smart, that is, it starts to ramp up pretty quickly as you grow. You know, for example, in a services firm like us, where it's a lot about establishing thought leadership with potential clients, you know, you need to go from having thought leadership of a single individual to trying to promote the thought leadership of all the staff in the entire firm. And that requires really more of a marketing effort. You know, you start thinking about marketing calendars and content marketing streams and, you know, marketing channels that you'd promote stuff. So it's very, very different than like a solo entrepreneur who just runs around giving conference presentations, right? You know, you've got a very different, you have to run a marketing engine. And again, you know, most owners are good at delivery. They're not necessarily good at these ancillary services to them. But frankly, those become super critical as they grow, and they either skill up and learn how to do them or they get consulting help for it. Because sometimes it's hard to hire it directly, right? It's hard to turn around and say, hey, I've got to six people. I'm now going to outsource all my business development to this person. I've seen firms try to do that and they end up hiccuping because that other person just doesn't have the same relationship. You know, they just don't. And so that's where I think things get into trouble. But anyway, that's some of the stuff on the sales and the marketing side.
Right. So I was listening to you, I was thinking or asking myself. So on the sales side, is there a particular profile of, let's say, the first hire on the sales side that the founder or founders should be considering?
Well, that varies a little bit, I think, based on the firm, right? I mean, if you're selling high-end professional services, you're probably better off for a while, at least, thinking about, you know, training up seller doers, because so much of it is relationship driven. So much of it has to have, broadly speaking, so-called technical knowledge, right? I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean writing code, but the idea that, you know, if you're an architectural engineering firm, you know, you're a guy who actually knows how to build bridges, right? And you're going to try to help educate the customers from that perspective. When you look at it in other firms, though, you probably could hire somebody who's more like a hunter-killer submarine, you know, who goes out and just does lead gen and captures the right kind of clients for you. But frankly, that only starts to really happen when you get to maybe 15, 20 people. It's really hard to have somebody just dedicated to sales who actually understands delivery and everything else and educate them appropriately. Now, you might find a perfect guy who can do that, but I'd say a full-time BD person probably doesn't happen for a lot of those small companies till they get at least above 10 people and potentially closer to 20. So in the in-between time, you're trying to take current staff and make sure they help you with your sales efforts. And of course, the final point is some of this depends on how big the ownership team is. You know, Cascade's owned by two people, so we can scale a little differently from a business partnership in terms of client relationships before we need staff to help. But if you're really solo, yeah, you're going to run into that problem, and it's a challenging one for most businesses.
Absolutely. So we have just a couple of minutes before, before the next break. But I want us to just at least start talking about the same question of how this whole thing evolves, but now on the service or product delivery side. Maybe you can kind of compress that really quickly.
Yeah, sure. So from the service and product delivery side, I think the biggest thing that changes is you need to start listening to your staff when it comes to what's going to be a new service line or a new offering for you, because you're not doing all the projects. So inherently, I mean, you may be involved in them even to a large extent, but as you grow from 5 to 10 to 15, you're not going to be doing all of them. And so they're going to have a pretty good insight in terms of, you know, hey, this project type we do is really profitable and it works really smoothly. Or they might even say, hey, you know, here's a whole another type of project we could do for our clients. And sometimes owners, you know, ego gets in the way or past history gets in the way. And you say, you kind of poo-poo the idea, you know, because maybe 10 years ago you tried it and failed. Well, that was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not to say you just throw all your experience out the window. But the reality is you got to really listen to the staff so that if they're telling you there's a type of project you should do or a way to relate to clients that might lead to revenue. And frankly, you also need to kind of tell them that it's okay to share those suggestions and really be, you know, advocates for them. So that's probably the biggest thing in the product service delivery is that you no longer have solo insight in terms of what your customer base might want. And so you have to put in some processes to kind of extract that from your staff.
So what you're saying, in a sense, Sean, is that you have to learn the art of delegating. You have to really get out of the way.
Correct. Exactly.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break in just a few seconds. And when we come back, I'd like us to start drilling a little bit deeper into this whole notion of working on the business that, of course, as you mentioned earlier, Sean, Michael Gerber pioneered 25, 30 years ago in his mythical book, E-Myth. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain, so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
How is your work-life balance? In most businesses, no matter where you are positioned, there is always room for improvement. If you're an executive, learn insight about your business. Are you an employee? Learn how to better work with your team. Even if you're not in business, you can learn where your strengths and weaknesses can be played to their best potential. The Work-Life Balance with host Rick Morris can be heard live every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
If you're looking for an in-depth, thought-provoking discussion about leadership, tune in to Bernard E. Robinson's The Leadership Forum, Making an Impact Through Effective Leadership. Each program provides an intelligent, conversational experience about leadership from Bernard, his guests, and you. If you're interested in improving the quality of leadership in your organization, listen live every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time and 8 a.m. Pacific Time for The Leadership Forum on the Voice America Business Channel.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Serge Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Serge Samel back, your host, and I am sitting here with Sean Campbell, CEO of Cascade Insights. And Sean, the theme of our conversation is working on the business. So first, let's get to the basics. What does actually working on the business really mean?
Well, I think if you looked inside a company that was doing it right, I think you'd see that they're developing processes. You would see data in use versus just pure intuition. And I'm not one of these people that think intuition should be devalued. I mean, I can't count the number of times I've gotten myself out of a situation by just intuition, you know, in business. But I do think as the business grows in complexity, it's not a matter of intuition versus data. It's just more the data provides a level of insight you just couldn't get otherwise. Your brain just can't, you know, capture all of the data points all in your head at one time. So you should put it down, and you know, you see companies using a lot more spreadsheets, a lot more analytical type services. And I think that's really, really key. Someone who's stuck in it, they're always going to be telling you they're challenged to find the time to do stuff. They're always going to be saying, I'll do that instead of here's this process I need you to follow. You know, so they're constantly kind of taking tasks from employees as opposed to enabling them and giving them processes to follow. And if you have a business that's not really focused on processes, you know, you're not doing kind of transactional type stuff, maybe you're focused more on giving people a mission that's really clear so they know how to operate when you're not, you know, actively engaged with them. You know, they can work very proactively for days or weeks or even a month at a time, as long as they know what the mission is for servicing mm-hmm. your clients. And I think those are some of the major differences, you know. So it's a little more emphasis on process. You see, you know, people talk about processes more that they're using. They talk a lot more about data and how it's informed their decisions. And they, you know, they're not constantly saying, I'll do that every time an employee gets stuck.
And how about time sinks we call meetings actually take place? Does working on the business involve actually kind of regulating that part as well, or are there any cues from this kind of a way of thinking about the business that will actually alleviate this enormous time sink, as I said?
Well, you know, that's an interesting one. I think some ownership, leadership teams, small companies are really good maybe from the start at not having a lot of meetings, right? I think mm-hmm. it's a temperament thing a little bit. Right. I would say that the thing to modulate is communication, you know, whether it's an actual meeting or not. You know, when you're a small company, there's a lot of, like I said, dreaming plus doing, and you want to focus on the doing, you know, at the very beginning. Right. But you know, frankly, especially if you got a co-owner, you know, there can be a lot of talk that goes on, you know, hey, we'd like to do this year, we'd like to do that next year. And that's great. You know, you need to do that. You absolutely mm-hmm. need to do that. But, you know, I think if what you're getting at is, you know, the meetings can keep you from doing, and doing leads to a healthy P&L, and that healthy P&L allows you to reach some of those dreams or aspirations you have. Yeah, it's definitely something to keep in mind. And I think it's a little bit of a cultural thing that you set to the staff. You know, if you find your staff kind of having meetings that drift away from the business focus they need to have, that's just a leadership thing. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's less about whether it's a meeting, and it's more about whether the communication is effective and useful as it happens throughout the day.
That's right. So do you have any examples maybe of leadership teams in your experience that have been really good at working on the business versus working in the business? Just to get a little bit more concrete and practical about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I'll just open up our business because, you know, frankly, our first business, while we were successful and we sold it, we probably did too much working in it. It was a lot too often that if a client had an issue, we would jump in and try to save the day as a leadership team. If, you know, we were dealing with a sales challenge, we would be like, I'm getting on a plane and we're just going to go fix that, you know, and we're going to go do that, you know. Or if we had a problem with a project, you know, we try to kind of pick up the pieces and fix it ourselves and then put it back in front of the employee and say, see, it's fixed. You know, I think that just is maturity a bit. You know, none of those things you should really be doing as the business is growing. I mean, if you looked at our business now, even as a 14-person firm, you know, there's a lot of spreadsheets around here. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of analysis. There's a lot of, you know, let's not guess what our win rate is for the quarter. Let's actually have tracked it for the last 3 years so we can know how it varies. And there's a lot of practicality too. You know, you don't let yourself get wrapped up in vanity metrics, for example, when it comes to marketing. It's so easy when you start a firm, you know, hey, people visited my blog, people listened to my podcast, you know, people went right. and, you know, retweeted me, but maybe none of those people are potential customers, right? Exactly. You know, is your contact us form actually getting filled? Is your phone actually ringing? You know, are clients actually mentioning the marketing you're doing? You know, I think a group of people that are working on it, you know, they sound very practical. They're still inspired. They're still being creative, but they're pretty practical about the way things look. You know, they're very ready to tell you, like, you know, different ways their finances look. They can be very accurate about that in terms of, you know, this is the current state of things financially. This is the current state of the things with staff retention. So things like that, I think, really show you that you've got a business that's working on it. You know, when you ask them to explain the business, they talk to you in those kind of terms. You know, here's our data, here's our insights, here's our reports, here's where we stand, and here's my mission. You know, somebody who's working in it keeps telling you these hero stories of how they saved the day. And that's not to say that wasn't hard work. And maybe right. that was a lot of work to do that. But those hero stories don't really lead you to working on it. You know, frankly, your employees become the heroes as you start to work on it more. And those are the people you try to elevate. And you talk more about the awesomeness of your staff and what they were able to accomplish. And you're empowering them more than you're trying to be a personal superhero.
Speaking about data, do you have any like favorite kinds of measurables at the leadership team level, let's say, that people should always keep an eye on, aside from the obvious, you know, financial kinds of issues, as they start actually using data to drive the business, essentially as a way to actually measuring or having their finger on the pulse of the business?
Yeah, there's probably a lot of things there. I mean, one of the things we do regularly that helps a lot is we do kind of a where a dollar goes kind of analysis, right? You know, It's very easy to get lost in conversations with your business partner. I can say from personal perspective, and I love my business partner. We've worked together for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And his name's Scott Swigert, by the way, but you know, we've worked together for a ton of time and we've got a great relationship, but you know, it's very easy, especially if you look at data from different perspectives, to kind of get in arguments about, well, accrual says this in the accounting system and cash says this. And, you know, we'll look at accounts receivables and then look at, you know, accounts, you know, look at our P&L over X amount of time. So sometimes you need an abstraction that kind of makes it easier for you to work. You know, so we do, sometimes this where a dollar goes analysis where we just take all the business, you know, proceeds and say, hey, you know, if everything just boiled down to a dollar, you know, what percentage of that dollar goes to marketing? What percentage of that dollar goes to sales? What percentage of that dollar goes to payroll? What percentage of that dollar goes to contractor expense? And sometimes that can really just kind of make it simple and say, you know, hey, it looks like our sales expense has gone up from 20% to 30%. Just making up numbers here, right? I'm not saying that's exactly what we have. But because you need those kind of abstractions. And we do that through a lot of things in the business, you know, whether it's tracking the amount of time employees spend on projects or whether it's looking at, you know, sales process. And the one other thing, though, too, about numbers is pick the number that tells the best story. You know, like with my marketing team, we look at all kinds of stuff. We look at how many times the podcast gets played. We look at how many times, you know, Google Analytics says a page was shown and whether the people went to other pages off of that page. And we look at social media shares. But I tell the marketing team all the time, if no one ever filled in the contact us form, if nobody ever phoned us, if a client never mentioned that the content somehow motivated them to work with us, all the other metrics don't matter. And I think that's really the biggest challenge with data with small businesses is, especially today. Mm-hmm. Like when I had started my first business in 1999, you know, data was what was on your hard drive. That was all you had, right? I mean, you had a QuickBooks file on your hard drive, you had Excel, you track stuff and that was it. Well, you know, there's a guy pitching you an analytics tool every day of the week now. Plug this into your QuickBooks, plug this into, you know, whatever
exactly.
You got. And the question is, did you lose yourself in just staring at those analytics and you forgot to do stuff? And and related to that, did you pick the measure that's actually what matters? Right? You know, that's the thing. So like on marketing as an instance, it's like, did we get work? So in our CRM, we track every opportunity and say whether it was marketing impacted or not, meaning did marketing actually bring it to the front door? And we track that revenue and we compare it with what our seller doers do. And we compare it with what we do as principals of the firm. And that way we can know that, hey, marketing brought in real revenue. So all the, you know, and it's a delicate balancing act because it depends on what question you're trying to ask. You know, are you trying to ask, was your content generally more popular this quarter than last quarter on your blog? Well, you can use Google Analytics for that. Is the content actually driving any sales at all? Well, Google Analytics doesn't always tell you that. I mean, especially if you're a services firm, right? And you don't have like an add to cart on the website where you can kind of track transactions that way. It can be a lot more nebulous as to what your marketing's doing with kind of in a professional services firm model. So I just think it's just keeping it real with the metrics. And like I said at the start of the podcast, it's a little bit of that dream versus do thing. You have teams that they lose themselves in the analytics and they tell themselves they're running the business through that. But realistically, they're just staring at cells in a spreadsheet. They're not actually doing anything with what's there. And so find the metrics that matter. You know, find the ones that actually tell you you're being successful. And those are the ones you should stare at every day.
Such a good advice. So Shana, we are taking a break in just a few seconds. When we come back, I'd like us to spend just another minute or two talking about that inflection point that leadership team of a emerging entrepreneurial business experiences moving from working in the business to trying to work on the business and what happens there. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain, so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serju Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
Higher education faces lots of changes. If you are a student, educator, or in the workforce, you'll want to tune into Big Beacon Radio, Transforming Higher Education. Your host, Dave Goldberg, and his guests will explore the innovations that higher education adopts as it reinvents itself. The world of higher education is constantly changing. Stay on top and stay ahead of the rest. Big Beacon Radio, Transforming Higher Education. Listen Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Serju Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Serju Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Sean Campbell, CEO of Cascade Insights. So, Sean, we were talking about this whole progression in the early stages of the growth of a entrepreneurial business with respect to the owners or the leaders of the business, from working in the business to working on the business. But we know that that inflection doesn't happen instantaneously. It's not like effective Monday morning in some sort of a memo, the owner or the CEO says, I'm stopping working in the business. I will now, from now on, work only on the business. Of course, that's not reality. So what happens when the leadership team continues to try to work in the business while they're trying to work on the business?
Well, if they don't do it right, they're going to get burned out. You know, the clients are going to notice, and their business is going to suffer as a result. I mean, because it is a balancing act. It really is. And it's probably the time where, as an owner, you know, you mentioned earlier kind of, you know, too many meetings. You know, you have to be really, really circumspect about how you use your time at that point, because you are going to get pulled two different ways. You know, you're going to have the meeting where you talk about hiring strategy. At the same time, you're just trying to replace the employee that just left. And I think that can be a really challenging mental time. You know, I think that's where, like, family support and, you know, emotional support that you can get from other folks is really strong. It's probably a great time to go ask for third party advice too. I've made really good advantage of that over the years. You know, when we decided that we were going to invest a lot more in digital marketing a number of years ago, I spent a year just working with different consultants, you know, and just trying to get a feel for what was going to be a best practice. So, you know, I think probably the biggest risk is people go from working in it to on it, and they never ask for external help. And it can be challenging as a small business because asking for consulting help can, you know, it's not exactly the cheapest thing to do. But I think in the long run, it really saves you time. So if you can order yourself and say, hey, this is the time I'm going to work on marketing. I need to spend the next 6 months working with some real good professionals who can coach me, can educate me. And the same thing's true through all the rest of it. You know, sales was the same thing. As we decided to grow our sales practice, there was this sales expert I reached out to, and he was really good at kind of just validating and cross-checking some of the things that we were thinking about. Operationally, we've done the same thing over the years. And so I think you have to be humble enough and put your ego on the shelf enough that you can go to those people and say, like, I don't really know what to do here. And that's a real vulnerable thing because you don't get to do that with your staff. There's a great scene in the movie Saving Private Ryan that I love where Tom Hanks's character is kind of walking away from Omaha Beach at that point. It's a fairly decent amount in the movie. And Tom Hanks says, he's having this conversation with the rest of the group he's walking with and the other soldiers, and they start complaining. And they say, you know, to Tom Hanks's character, well, you know, don't you want to complain along with us in so many words? And he says, that's not the way this works, gentlemen. You know, I don't complain down to you. You know what I mean? I complain up. And, you know, kind of thing. And I think you need to have somebody to complain up to. You need to have somebody that you can go to and say, I don't really know how to run this marketing initiative. I frankly don't. And I can't talk to my staff because they need me to be, you know, kind of a source of courage and strength and conviction. And, you know, you don't need to put up a false front in front of your staff, but they do expect you to kind of at least look like you know what you're doing. And so when you're kind of really searching for the next step operationally or sales or marketing, that's a great time to get a mentor. And I think, and I've, you know, as years have grown, I've had the opportunity to do that kind of, you know, just one-on-one with other business owners, and it's been really rewarding. So I also think, you know, as you get comfortable with it, make sure you kind of share that back, you know, with other people that are struggling. You know, as a, for instance, I don't know how many probably books of the E-Myth Revisited I've ended up selling just by saying that one line to people who are getting started. You know, and there's lots of other stuff along those lines. So anyway, that's my thoughts on that front.
Exactly. So actually, speaking about movies, I'm glad that you brought that up. Here's an interesting question for you. So if anyone made a movie about your life, Sean, what would it be called?
Well, I think it would be Rudy, if anybody's ever seen that movie. You know, I grew up in Chicago, Irish Catholic, very much like Rudy. You know, Rudy just keeps trying. He just keeps trying. He's not always the most athletic. He's not always the strongest, the tallest, but he just keeps trying. You know, trying hard and consistent and along the while being fairly creative. Rudy's very creative in that movie and how he tries to get into Notre Dame. But outside of that, it's not a movie about his creativity inherently. It's more about his pluck and his willingness to keep moving. That movie always touches me because I think so often these days, people are just a couple percentage points from completing the job. And, you know, people tell them, well, you've worked hard enough. You know, here's your participation trophy. And I think, you know, while you can overwork and you can, you know, work so hard that you ignore what really matters, you know, hard work in general is a good thing. And so I think that movie is one of the ones that comes to mind a lot of times.
Absolutely. So I'd like to actually offer you the opportunity to give our listeners a gift via two quick recommendations. So what would you recommend as a book and as maybe an app that they could use?
Sure. On the book side, I would say read a book called Stall Points. It's not as heralded, but it's a fascinating book, especially if you work with mid-market or enterprise companies. It talks a lot about how companies stall and whether they recover or don't. It's a fascinating read about business in general, but it's really good. I would also, because I'm a really avid reader, if you saw my Kindle book list, it's over like 900 books, and I have no idea how many printed books I have. It probably exceeds that. So the other thing I'd recommend is anything written by Alan Weiss. He has a blog called The Contrarian Consultant. He can be a little, let's say, over pithy at times, but some of the stuff he's written about proposal writing and managing clients in high-end services is really unparalleled. Some of the stuff is really, really good. In terms of apps, one thing I've been telling a lot of people about just this last week is Bear, which is an odd name for a note-taking app, but it's called Bear. And Bear has basically blown away my use of Evernote, which I'd used for the last 10 years. But Evernote got a lot bloated and felt like I was using an app from 1995 or something like that. And Bear has a lot of elegance to it. And it's just really been a great place to store my kind of, you know, work diary and all the notes I take on meetings and that kind of stuff. And the only other app I'd say in closing is LastPass. Like a lot of folks these days, you know, you don't use local apps on at least your machine, but you use a lot of SaaS services, you know, software as a service apps. And LastPass is a great app to have to make sure I've got really good complex passwords for all those services we use.
Exactly. So if people want to reach out to you, Sean, about, I don't know, working on the business or about your company's services or anything else for that matter, what's the best way?
Well, you can always check out our website at cascadeinsights.com. You can drop me an email at Sean, S-E-A-N, at cascadeinsights.com. And you can also always check out our podcast, B2B Revealed. We cover a lot of interesting subjects there, too. But any one of those ways would be a great way to reach out.
Thank you so much, Sean, for being my guest here. And thank you, our listeners, for spending this precious hour with us. If you found what you heard on this show helpful, point your business friends and colleagues to Operationally Speaking. And if you listen to us on our webpage at voiceamerica.com, don't hesitate to click on the banners to get your free consultation on how to turn your business vision into reality right now. Or send me a request at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. You will be surprised of what's possible, and I promise you'll never regret it. So see you again next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern or 12 noon Pacific. And until then, make it an operationally sound and happy week. Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in to Operationally Speaking. Be sure to join your host, Sergio Semel, for another great program 1 week from today. We're live every Friday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. In the meantime, you can reach Sergio for additional questions at 1-617-731-3132 or by email at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that is os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Enjoy your upcoming weekend, and may you and your business make it a smooth and successful week.